from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you. And from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get a preview of Schoolhouse Rock Live at the Civic Theater.
I'll have a look at the upcoming Stutz Artist Open House.
And I'll talk with the Children's Museum's Jeffrey Patchen, who's on a dig in Egypt, talked to us live from the Nile.
Cool.
plus, there's our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Conjunction, junction, what's your function? And if you know the next line to that, then you probably grew up watching Schoolhouse Rock in the 1970s on Saturday mornings between the cartoons. And now you can see Schoolhouse Rock live at the Civic Theater as their first Indianapolis Children's Theater's production. Travis DiNicola spoke with Civic's Director of Music and Education, Brent Marty, to find out more.
As your body grows bigger,
your mind must flower.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
It's Schoolhouse Rockin', a chip off the block of your favorite Schoolhouse.
Brent, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Great to see you.
Thank you, Travis. My pleasure.
You know, I was just thinking, most of the time when you're on the show, it's usually like out at Penrod we get you on talking about the...
I'm in an outdoor venue. Thank you for the cover because it's raining.
I know. Inside. So, hey, this is some pretty exciting stuff about what you guys are doing with really a whole new children's theater program. Of course, I mean, you're the director of music and education, so this is near and dear
right.
to your heart.
Correct.
Kicking off with Schoolhouse Rock Live, which
I know.
Is just a hoot. Where do we begin here?
Well, you know, we've been thinking about this kind of programming for several years now, just trying to work out a way to get it going and working on securing the actual name. We are going to be producing this program under the name the Indianapolis Children's Theater,
okay.
Even though it's all under the umbrella of Indianapolis Civic Theater and using the resources that Civic has to offer as far as space and staff and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But we are the Indianapolis Children's Theater, and we're looking for a big fancy title that people would love. And Schoolhouse Rock immediately came to mind. This is a show, you know, is based on the Saturday morning cartoon series from the 1970s, which I grew up watching.
You and me both.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And this show was put together, you know, about 15 years ago by a couple of guys in Chicago. They thought, hey, this is great. People know what it is and it'll sell.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been going gangbusters for them since then. Been produced all over the country. And it's all those songs that everybody knows. I'm just a bill.
I know. You know, I was thinking of that.
Conjunction, junction, and all those great songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're great. I mean, whether it's about, you know, songs about grammar,
mm-hmm.
songs about the government.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these were really, really fun pieces. And you're right. And they are songs that definitely influenced us, educated us.
I can say that I probably would have learned the preamble of the Constitution, but I would not have learned it as easily if I hadn't had that song,
mm-hmm.
We the People. So there you go. I mean, it's evident. And so we know that this is a great title for kids because it's a learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is it a great live theater experience for children, but they get the educational side like smack in the face here. You know, the curriculum is automatically meeting all the standards. But for adults as well, for people my age, your age, who remember the songs and still hum them, and it's great fun to see them performed live on stage. I went to see a production just last spring down in Louisville,
mm-hmm.
Stage One Children's Theater. They produced it, and it was contagious. It was an auditorium full of 5th through 8th graders, and they went wild. And so did I. I went wild. I loved it.
Do kids know these songs?
They may not know them per se, although there has been a resurgence. You know, it was released on DVD,
mm-hmm.
And there are CDs out there. So there is some, it's out there in some places, and some teachers use them in the classroom.
Yeah.
So it's there. Some of them knew. I mean, it's not wildly popular like it was
right.
when we were growing up, but the tunes were written specifically to appeal to children, and so they're repetitive, and they make sense like that to kids, and so they automatically latch on. So I'm sure that will happen in the theater as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to go out humming.
Now tell me this, because, so Indianapolis Children's Theater.
Yes.
And sometimes when you hear that, you think of adults performing for kids.
Right.
Other times you think of kids performing for kids and adults. What's going on?
Good, thanks for that, because that is true. And at Civic, we have a long tradition of having students Children Performing for Children, and that program mm-hmm. is still in place. That's the Junior Civic Main Stage Musical, which will be coming up in June. But this is a professional company of adult actors performing for students, and so this was something else that I was really hip on working on for lo these many years. There's nothing like that in the city. There are companies that do produce. The Children's Museum has a wonderful theater program there.
Sure.
Children's Theater Institute is another program that's been going on for several years in the city, but there was never anything really on a bigger scale.
Ongoing.
Yeah, that was ongoing and sort of had established a name. And if you look at any other city in the region, St. Louis, Cincinnati, Louisville, Cleveland, Chicago, all of these cities have thriving children's theater programs. Mm-hmm. And it's not only, oh, that's an easy audience, you know, let's bring in the busloads of kids, but it is also because the programming they're presenting is cutting edge on a lot of levels. Yeah. Children's theater is very progressive in this country.
Now, to be fair, the IRT does do some shows.
Yeah, well, the IRT, of course.
You know, some shows that they bring in, whether it's their the Short and Shakespeare shows
right.
or things like Diary of Anne Frank.
They're really gearing towards an older audience
right.
generally in what they do. Mm-hmm. We're gearing really towards an elementary school audience. Also, Clues Hall has an outstanding program where they're bringing in national tours of shows and busing the kids in to watch those on the Clues Hall stage. We're going to be presenting
local.
With local talent, local artists, local actors, supporting the artistic community here in Indianapolis, which I also feel is very important as a member of, mm-hmm. of that community, and really coming at it from that angle. So not only are they getting wonderful shows, mm-hmm. they're getting great local talent who need to be seen by these kids.
Now, so, is the thought that it will always be musicals, or will it be...
Not necessarily, yeah. no. We're going to... I mean, obviously, we're starting with a musical. It's mm-hmm. and a little bit of an easier sell. But, no, we're going to be looking at all kinds of material. And as we expand the programming over the next several years, you'll see more of that. But right now, we're starting out small. We're doing this one production this year.
Okay.
We might expand to two next year, maybe keep it at one, maybe wait for the future. You know, Civic is moving here.
That's right.
And we'll be looking at different spaces that we might be able to perform in. So while we're starting small right now, we do look to expand to a larger season somewhere down the line.
And do you think, I mean, right now, this production of Schoolhouse Rock takes place from April 12th through the 17th.
That's right.
Will it always, you think, be in the spring, or is that too soon to say?
Too soon to say, probably. I mean, we'll probably look at something that goes throughout the school year. Mm-hmm. But right now, spring was the place in our schedule at Civic where we could drop this in, so that's where it landed.
Now, will you have kids bust in? Is that
that's
from
the plan?
School?
Yeah, we already have several schools attending.
Mm-hmm.
These are matinee productions during the week, Monday through Friday, April the 12th through the 16th at 10 o'clock, and again at noon, two shows a day.
Okay,
and still seats available. And then also on that Saturday, the 17th, we are offering two matinees that day, one at 2 o'clock and one at 5 o'clock, and we hope that families will come out. For that
was my next question. So you've got some shows that are going to be available, open to the public.
Uh-huh.
Families can come out. So especially that Saturday, the 17th,
right.
2 to 5 p.m.
All the shows are open to the public. Mm-hmm. But obviously during the week, it's harder for parents to get away from work and
sure.
such. But so Saturday, that's the reason for the Saturday production. So we can bring in some local families and have a family event.
A family of three, because three is...
the magic number.
That's right.
Perfect.
Oh, I love that. Was a great song.
I know, and you know, you remember when they did this? There was an album that came out a couple of years ago of covers all these progressive rock bands,
indie rock bands covering this. And
yeah,
that was one of the best ones.
I know it was Blind Melon.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't believe I know that, but that's who it was.
No, that was a great album. That's right. Yeah. This is all very cool, and as you mentioned, right now you guys are still on the campus of Marion College,
right.
Marion University, excuse
yes.
me, and will continue to be out there on Cold Spring Road for the next year and a half.
Right,
about,
through next spring,
season.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that's where the shows still are right
yes,
now.
Yes, please come to Marion University, 3200 Cold Spring Road. Can I tell people how to get tickets, Travis?
Please do.
They can call our box office, which is at 317-923-4597, or visit our website at civictheater.org. You can purchase tickets there as well.
Very good. And, you know, while I got you here in the studio, Brent,
mm-hmm.
I want to ask you, because I know you just also announced next year's season.
Oh, yeah, for Civic.
Yeah, which, mm-hmm. Since obviously this is all part of that as well, Indianapolis Children's Theater being part of the work that you do at the Civic.
Yep.
A lot of great musicals, and it is your last season at Marion University.
Our final season at Marion.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to be launching our season starting in September with the wonderful family musical, Annie. And following that up with the play, a one-woman play based on the life of Emily Dickinson called The Belle of Amherst. And then our holiday show is slated to be Beauty and the Beast, mm-hmm. which we're bringing back. Then in the wintertime, we're going to be presenting The Last Night of Ballyhoo, a great play by Alfred Uhry,
oh, wow.
of Driving Miss Daisy fame.
Yeah, yeah.
And then our big spring musical will be Candor and Ebb's Cabaret, which I'm very much looking forward to. And then we'll be wrapping up the season with the hilarious farce, the musical comedy Murders of 1940.
Oh, yeah, that's
so it's a really fun season next year, so we hope people will come out. And we will be announcing our children's theater programming soon for next season, as well as our concert series, which we are going to be continuing, which we launched this year.
Oh, that's right. It's not the full production of
right.
shows.
We put the orchestra on the stage and have the performers there, and we perform the whole score and the script, but it's in a concert setting, which audiences have really picked up on. I think they enjoy. So we've got some exciting titles sort of swirling around right now. We haven't announced those yet.
Now, I know Carousel just wrapped up.
That's correct.
What else is going on in this?
Coming up to finish up our season this year will be the farce by Georges Feydeau. Do you like my French? called A Flea in Her Ear, which is a really, really hysterical play. That'll be opening.
What's that about? I haven't heard of that.
Oh, it's about, of course, your classic farce, mistaken identities, mm-hmm. you know, who's sleeping with who and revolving doors and all this kind of thing. It's about a doctor who goes to the country and there's a hotel. It's a really involved story that would probably take me another 15 minutes to explain. Suffice it to say, it's hilarious. It's one of the funniest things that I performed it years ago, and it was a favorite. So I hope, I'm sure audience will love it. And that is coming up in May.
Great. Okay.
Yeah.
And of course, for information on all of that,
please go to
civictheater.org.
That's correct. Our website, civictheater, spelled with an R-E, the fancy way, .org.
Very good. Brett, always a pleasure to chat with you. Thanks so much for coming in today.
It was my pleasure, Travis. Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with Brent Marty, the Indianapolis Civic Theater's Director of Music and Education. You can see Schoolhouse Rock live from April 12th through the 17th. For tickets and times, visit civictheater.org, civictheater.org, or call 923-4597, 923-4597.
Conjunction, what's your function?
Hooking up words and phrases and clauses.
Conjunction, how's that function?
I got three favorite cars that get most of my job done.
Conjunction, junction, what's their function?
I got and, button, or, they'll get you pretty far. And, that's an additive, like this and that. But, that's sort of the opposite, not this, but that. And then there's or, O-R, when you have a choice like this or that.
Making
them run right. Milk and honey, bread and butter, peas and rice.
Hey, that's nice.
Dirty but happy, digging and scratching, losing your shoe and a button or two. He's poor but honest, sad but true. Boo!
Conjunction, junction, what's your function?
Hooking up two cars to one when you say something like this. Choice, either now or later, or no choice. Neither now nor ever.
Hey, that's clever.
Eat this or that, the growth in or fat. Never mind, I wouldn't do that, I'm fat enough now.
Conjunction, junction, what's your function?
Hooking up phrases and clauses that balance like out of the frying pan and into the fire. He cut loose the sandbags, but the balloon wouldn't go any higher. Let's go up to the mountains or down to the seas. You should always say thank you or at least say please.
Conjunction, junction, what's your function?
Hooking up words and phrases and clauses in complex sentences like, in the mornings when I'm usually wide awake, I love to take a walk through the gardens and down by the lake, where I often see a duck and a drake. And I wonder as I walk by just what they'd say if they could speak. Although I know that's an absurd thought.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Crocuses, spring break, and turning off the furnace. These are clues that spring is here. But for dozens of Indianapolis visual artists and the thousands of people who love them and their work, the true harbinger of spring is the annual Stutz Artist Open House. Sharon Gamble invited Stutz mixed media artist Karen Land to tell us why you should give her your unwanted old family photos and what it's like to be facing the open house deadline.
All right, first things first, how long have you been at the Stutz?
This will be my fourth open house, and I've been there 3 full years.
And what attracted you to this fabulous facility in the first place?
Well, the studio spaces are wonderful. I really like having a lot of light, and quite honestly, my husband was ready for me to have a studio.
This tells me you had a home studio and it was starting to take over other parts of your life?
It was taking over our kitchen most times. So it's wonderful to have a creative sanctuary to create your work.
And your mixed media ingredients don't extend to bread or eggs or other things that you might find in the kitchen.
Especially not now, yeah.
How did you get started with mixed media?
Well, my background is in design and photography. And over the years, I had gotten away from painting. And when I came back to it, I kind of combined everything I'd learned from all the different media into one kind of work.
Now, talk to me about process then in that context. Do you do something different when you're painting with oil as opposed to when you're maybe working with some other materials? Do you have to prepare in different ways, mentally or emotionally, or is it just all the same inspiration? You're just reaching for different ingredients.
Well, I like to think that I'm trying to find a place between photography and painting. I've been collecting antique photographs since I've been a high school student, and that's escalated in recent years. And my current work really combines a lot of layers of acrylic paint with some images that are drawn from the antique photographs.
What attracted you to the photos in the first place?
I love the sense of history, and I like the sense that there is a kind of humanity that extends over time, that even though we may look really different, we have a lot of the same core human attributes.
You're attracted to photographs of people.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the first one?
I remember some of the first ones I had were older, and they all looked very stern, and I tried to get them the ones that kind of looked the meanest because they were really funny to me.
So did you find yourself creating a little script for who they were and what the situation was?
Yeah, I kind of feel like the people have lost their stories in the images, and one of the things that I drew in my art is try to give them new stories.
How do you decide on those stories?
One of the things I try to do is just take ideas about popular culture and current world and find almost like central casting to find people who can fit those stories. A lot of times I'm exploring ideas of archetypes or gender roles and really trying to find people in photos that fit those stories.
You brought to the studio one of your rack cards, which has this fabulous photograph of a young man. I'm guessing he's probably high school age because he's in a letter sweater it's a white sweater. He's got a blue turtleneck and a big blue B. So obviously he went to a school that had, you know, the bumblebees or the something as their mascot and their team name. And you've tricked him out. He's become a king.
I kind of wanted him to be someone who would sweep in and save the day. Last year during the economic meltdown, I started working on this piece, and it looked like everybody was looking for a hero. And I wanted him to be able to sweep in and save the day.
All right. So he has a crown hovering overhead, almost like a halo, mm-hmm. that gives him superpowers, and he's wearing a cape.
And the B stands for bailout.
That is fabulous. You know, this makes me wonder. I am not a visual artist, but a few years ago I was in an antique store and I found this fabulous wedding photo from the 1920s, and it's two couples, and they're rather serious looking. I guess maybe because they had to pose for a long time and they lost their smiles or something. And I just felt sad that they were sitting in a store, so I bought it and I took it home and I've sort of adopted them. And I've heard of other people doing this too. Do you ever encounter other people who are drawn inexplicably to photos and want to do something to recreate the lives?
I think that there is an element to that of just feeling like you are rescuing kind of these last traces and and I know that there are other people that like to collect them, and just because there's some sort of a charm or certain ones of the photos will really speak to people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I said recreate. I guess I really should say reinvent, because that's what you're doing. You're taking these folks from another era and pulling them into our day and reinterpreting them. Do you ever do this with photos of your own family or
I like to families? I like to keep it strangers, because it's like with your own families, you know the stories and you already have kind of a script for what is in the images, and I really like starting fresh with others.
And the source of most of your photos?
Antique shops and flea markets. I also am a big fan of eBay, so a lot of my pictures come from those places.
We better be careful. People are going to show up during the open house with crates full of photos for you. Not that that's a bad thing. Here are my old relatives. I don't want them anymore. You take them. Make them new. Reinvent them. You brought with you, and this is both fabulous and a little bit scary, the Stutz Artists Association's open house first national magazine article in American Art Collector, and it's a beautiful color spread about the event. And the reason I think it's a little scary is because, yikes, you're already slammed, especially on Friday night. What does it mean to you as an artist at the Stutz to have this kind of recognition, this kind of national recognition?
We're very excited to be in American Art Collector magazine. We have been hearing for the last couple years from some people from Chicago that there is no event like it
really?
In Chicago or in some of the neighboring cities in Ohio. So I think our regional draw has been growing. It's just a wonderful chance to get more people familiar with what we do and why this is such a unique event. We're really hoping that it will increase the numbers of people that will come in on Saturday from some of the neighboring areas.
And that's a good thing to point out, that in the minds of a lot of local folks, oh, Stutz Open House, Friday night, yeah, wine, cheese, lots of crowds, run into everybody I haven't seen in 6 months, buy art. And there's that in bands and party feeling, but there's a whole different atmosphere on Saturday. How would you characterize that?
I think Saturday is a little bit more laid back and family friendly. It's also a day when we allow children under 16 to come in for free with a paying adult. It's a really good chance to expose younger people to art. And I think people that are very serious and want to spend some more time with the artists and really look at things in a little bit more depth will have a little bit more time in that atmosphere.
Now, as an artist, I'm suspecting, especially since you got kicked out of your house by your husband and you're now at the Stutz, and I know the Stutz is a very collegial environment, and I've talked to Stutz artists over the years who say, yeah, if I have any kind of block, I just wander down the hall and see what the sculptor down the hall is doing or what the fabric artist upstairs might be working on now. But what's it like to go from working in your studio and having the peace and quiet to this open house environment? Is it scary at all, or is it exhilarating? What is it like? What are you feeling as the days come towards that? Or are you just too busy trying to finish the pieces that you're going to have out those days?
Well, I think there's like a hive of activity that goes on in the Stutz in the weeks leading up to the open house. Every artist is trying to work on new pieces and tidy up their spaces. Some of us need that a little more than others. But,
and where are you on that spectrum, I have to ask, since you put it that way?
Well, I would say I have a lot of work to do between now and the 23rd. It's really a chance for people to get together a lot of their new work from the year and put it in context. So I think there's a lot of anticipation. You're very excited, and then the people start pouring in, and it's a couple crazy hours, but it's very exciting.
Do you have expectations of or goals for yourself that you want? You just want it to be social. You want to make friends with people who might come back and purchase work later, or do you have goals where it's only a good night if I move X number of pieces?
I think different people have different goals. I tend to really take advantage of getting my work seen by a greater audience. I've only been in the Stutz for a few years, so I think my work is pretty new to Indianapolis. you always like to sell things. That's a wonderful thing. A lot of us try to have a lot of things in different price ranges to make that possible for different people. So I think you go into it with your own set of goals and see what happens.
Is it ever hard to let go of pieces?
Sometimes it is. A favorite home or a favorite piece, it's like you want to find a good home for it. And you love when that happens, you know, but it is, you do miss them.
It's a little pang of, oh, I've lived with this guy for the bailout superhero, for example, for the last 2 years, and now he's going away.
Yeah, I think that some of my work tends to be really one of a kind. I tend to work in series, but I think that there's a lot of distinction between individual ones. So it is almost like finding a home for a pet or something, sometimes.
Do you grill the people before you let them buy pieces? I mean,
we usually let them go home with people that like them. So.
I'm just thinking about placing puppies and kittens. You don't let them go with just anybody. Since a lot of photographs tend to be fairly small, do you have any particular urges ever to work in a larger format or to combine a lot of photos to do a really big piece?
A lot of my work tends to be pretty modest in scale, but I do some larger works that are about 2 feet up to about 3 feet. It really depends. I kind of dissect the photographs and assemble back together with a lot of painting, and I like to feel like there's a big journey that goes on between the original and the ultimate piece of art.
Do you, and in your process, do you document that process? Would you take a photo of the original antique photo and then maybe take photos as you go along, or do you just pull the source material and not care about what it looked like at the beginning because it's on this journey?
I really want it to come pretty far from what it was initially. A lot of my work will start out and I will digitally alter it and use different transfer methods and do a lot of different layers of paint and images to get what I want to eventually. So I feel like it's almost like taking a jigsaw puzzle and breaking them apart and putting it back together in a new context.
What's your favorite piece that you're going to have out at the open house?
Actually, one of my favorites from this year is from a photograph that I took in Chicago of the Skyway, and I thought it was kind of a metaphor for larger things. It's like it's a larger piece based on the Skyway booth.
Hmm. Is there someone in the booth, or was it empty at the time?
It's just.
Or have you removed the people from the booth?
It's mostly the neon sign that says Skyway, and it's almost like anyone who's been in the Skyway, you're frequently stuck in traffic for quite a while.
Uh-huh.
And it's almost like an invitation to fly off into the sky.
Sharon Gamble with mixed media artist Karen Land. She and her counterparts at the Stutz Building will have all sorts of great art to look at and to buy at the 17th Annual Stutz Artists Open House Friday, April 23rd from 5:30 to 10:30 and Saturday, April 24th from 2 to 7. More than 90 artists are participating with art from $12 to $10,000 and lots in between. If you're attracted to a more expensive piece, ask the artist about making payments. The first open house had a few artists, a kiddie pool filled with cans of beer, and an expectation of 100 attendees. 400 showed up, and the event has blossomed from there. Friday night is more of a grown-up party atmosphere, while Saturday is a bit more laid back. So, for more information, visit stutzartists.com. Again, stutzartists.com.
Hey, Travis.
Yeah.
There are only 11 in the basket, and I know I hid 12 out in the yard. do you want to see if you can find the last one? Because if it stays out in this warm weather, it is not going to be a pretty
thing.
I bet
a peep took it.
That's entirely possible. You know, peeps are sort of indestructible. They will inherit the earth.
Yes, they will.
Well, while you're either hiding Easter eggs in the lawn or trying to keep your children away from candy, we'll tempt you with some other things to do with your time and energy on this week's calendar we call
What Do We Do?
The peep-free edition.
The peep-free edition. Yeah. What eggs do you have in your basket, Sharon?
There you go.
Crimes of the Heart. Great
Speaking of hard-boiled.
Oh, Oh, nicely done. Won the Pulitzer Prize in 1981. Great play. And it is being performed up in Carmel. Carmel Community Players are doing it April 15th through the 25th. If you're not familiar with the play, it's about a family in Mississippi, and a really, really good story, and very well written, and looking forward to checking that out. Crimes of the Heart, Carmel Community Players, mid-April.
And I hear it from good authority from the director, who sits about 3 feet away from me in my day job,
yes,
that it's
mm-hmm.
a very fine cast.
Yes,
so excellent.
Too.
Hey, happy National Poetry Month.
Well, happy National Poetry Month to you,
too. I don't know what the appropriate gift is. Well, yes, of course I do. It's a book of somebody's poems. It's National Poetry Month, so if you needed something else to celebrate this month, go ahead and do that. And at noon on Mondays, most Mondays this mm-hmm. month, you can hear poets in the Indianapolis Arts Garden, including some of the usual suspects, including Terry Kurtz and Allison Horton, Dan Carpenter and J.L. Cato, Jim Walker, and more, as they say. So you can check that out online at indiearts.org/artsgarden.
There you go. Hey, a play going on this weekend, Galileo. It's a one-man show being performed by Tim Hardy. He's back in town. Did the show about a year ago through IUPUI, and he's performing it at the Indie Fringe this weekend. It's a story about Galileo and his discoveries. It's celebrating the 400th anniversary, and it is Friday and Saturday night, as well as Sunday at 3 p.m., Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. down at Indie Fringe.
Now, you're going to want to move quickly to score a ticket for my next event, which is next Saturday. That's April 10th. It is Baroque Bash. It's a wine reception, silent auction, and 18th century style dinner featuring a string trio from the Indianapolis Academy of Music, which is an outreach program of Indie Baroque. And it is a fundraiser, as you might imagine from the title. Baroque Bash is a fundraiser for Indie Baroque Org, indiebaroque.org. That's the parent organization of Ensemble Voltaire and the Indianapolis Baroque Orchestra. And that sounds like just a fabulous event. And again, it's coming up April 10th. If you go to indiebaroque.org, you can find out more and maybe score yourself a pair of tickets.
If you're listening to this on Friday night, then maybe you're out checking out the galleries, because it is First Friday.
It is.
And there's a lot of great shows going on. If you're listening to it Saturday, there's still stuff that you can go check out. One thing I definitely want to see is the new exhibit at IMOCA. It's titled Scene is Becoming. IMOCA, of course, the Indianapolis Museum of Contemporary Art, which is now located down in Fountain Square. And this show, it's very curious. It's some artists from Louisville, and the work that they're doing is sort of about how people look at art in galleries. The preview picture I've seen is basically sort of a couple of people standing around in the painting, looking like the people that are probably standing around looking at the painting, if that makes any sense.
I totally get that. It's like a hall of mirrors. You see the reflection.
Yeah, so very curious about that. Check that out at IMOCA.
Very good. Hey, there's some jazz going on as well in town, including on Wednesday, April 7th at 7:30 at the DeHaan Fine Arts Center, part of the U of Indy Jazz Artist Series. Bass player Rufus Reed, what a great, great musician. You can catch him on Wednesday at 7:30, that's April 7th. $20 for adults, $10 for seniors, kids 18 and under, and college students with ID, perfectly free, so free is good.
Free is good. Another show that's opening on First Friday, it's through the Heron School of Art and Design. It's their senior photography class, and the title of the show is Cue the Violins, and there's actually two locations for the show. It includes an installation and video, and part of it takes place at the Four Star Gallery on Mass Ave, which is just there next to Yatz, and then the video screening is at the Wheeler Arts Community Building down in Fountain Square, and so both of those are worth checking out as well.
Leopard, Leonardo da Vinci, Leprechaun, Lady Gaga. Help me out here. What are some other things that start with L?
Lucky Luciano.
Oh, I like that one. Why are we thinking about things that start with L? Well, this
la, la,
is...
La, 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 la,
la, la, la. Don't close your ears.
No.
This is the sponsor of this year's Indie Reads 2010 Alphabet Affair. It is sponsored by the letter L. And if you're not familiar, here's the scoop. It's a fundraiser for Indie Reads, a fabulous cause near and dear to the hearts of both people at mm-hmm. our side of the microphone, especially Travis, who's their executive director. It's on Saturday, May 1st, at the Hyatt Regency.
6 o'clock, reception cash bar, A to Z silent auction, 7:30, a parade of costumes with fabulous MC Scott Hoke, whose voice you're familiar with if you listen to Morning Edition here on WFYI. Fabulous dinner and music and dancing and all sorts of great things. And the attire is either black tie, which, okay, if you really have to do it, that's fine. But what's much more fun is to dress in an L-appropriate costume. And people get super creative with this.
Yes,
sometimes
they
you
do.
Have
I
to,
can't wait to
you
see
walk around and you look
to.
At the costumes and it's like, I don't know who you are. You have to connect the letter for me. You can find out more and grab yourself some tickets by contacting Indy Reads. You can go to indyreads.org and find out lots more about the L affair.
It should be a lovely time.
Oh, and lush, too.
Hey, up at Ball State University, they are hosting the Indiana premiere of the documentary film Louis Sullivan, The Struggle for American Architecture. And it's followed by a talk with the filmmaker Mark Richard Smith. And this is coming up this Tuesday, April 6th. And the program's going to take place in the Architectural Building, 7:30 p.m. So you get to watch the movie, hear from the filmmaker. And actually, if you come early, you can see the actual cornice from Sullivan's Chicago Stock Exchange building. And you know, it's a really neat program that's going on up at Ball State. And it's actually all free. So check that out this Tuesday at April 6th, 7:30 p.m. up at Ball State. You can actually get more information if you go to the bsu.edu website and just search for Louis Sullivan.
I love Louis Sullivan. You could go as Louis Sullivan to
you
the alphabet
pair. You could, perfect.
Might be easier for you than for me, though. Okay, so we had a little trip down memory lane to Schoolhouse Rock earlier today. If you are a person who remembers the 1980s in Indianapolis, then this band name will bring back some sort of memories. I can't promise they'll be good or bad, but they'll bring back memories. Dr. Bop and the Headliners. It was the ultimate bar band in the 80s, had its own bar and bartender on stage, and it was a mainstay at the Vogue nightclub in Broad Ripple, performed everywhere. Big stage dates at Market Square Arena and Circle Fest on Monument Circle. Well, they're coming back. Bop Till You Drop, The Legends Return will be taking place at the Athenaeum May 1st, one night only, a night that's being billed as a night of schlock and roll at the Athenaeum. So you can
schlock and roll.
You can get on the website for the A and find out more about that.
Hey, last thing I want to mention is often the Arts Council, well, they provide a great service through their Artist Services Program, and you can get more information and sign up for their e-newsletter at indiearts.org, where they list a lot of different local opportunities for artists to submit work, such as for Primary Colors right now is seeking work for Installation Nation, the Zoo is seeking work for their Artists in the Garden, but actually the Arts Council is seeking work for the Arts Council right now, because the Arts Council is moving, and they are moving to a new space at 924 North Pennsylvania, and they are seeking artists to create work that will then be printed on high-quality vinyl that will be put within the windows of their new space. All this selection criteria and the goals of it and all that stuff, all that information is available if you go to indiearts.org, but it's a very, very cool project.
I love that.
Another L word. Well, we'll be back with more L ideas and lots of things to do next week on
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Wrapping up its series of spring break adventure announcements, the Children's Museum of Indianapolis revealed this week the third and final component of its latest permanent exhibit in collaboration with National Geographic. Archaeological excavation of ancient Egyptian tombs and the treasures that are discovered will be one of three major areas of interest for National Geographic Treasures of the Earth, which opens during the summer of 2011. Travis DiNicola spoke with the Children's Museum's president and CEO, Jeffrey Patchen, who is currently digging Egypt.
Jeff, great to hear you calling from Egypt. How's the weather there right now?
You know, it was a great day today. I'm calling from Aswan. We're on our way up the Nile. We flew to Abu Simbel yesterday, and we then flew to Aswan, and we are will be departing Aswan on our way to Kamombo, and then eventually to the Valley of the Kings, which is tied to our new exhibit, the National Geographic Treasures of the Earth, where we will be replicating part of the tomb of Seti I, one of the great pharaohs, and the reason for replicating that tomb, portion of that tomb, is that Dr. Zahi Hawass and his team have found what they believe is a new shaft or new entrance to that tomb, and we're going to be replicating that opportunity for children and parents to discover exactly what Dr. Hawass and his team have discovered.
Really? So a new entrance. This is a pretty big deal. I mean, so are you actually going to be like sort of on a dig there, or?
Well, we won't be on a dig. No, the tomb is closed and it's under excavation. Particularly this new shaft. The last time I was there about a year ago, they were doing this work, and apparently they are very close, if not at the end of this shaft, and where it will eventually be revealed exactly what they found. So we're hoping to be able to get into that tomb with the permission of Dr. Hawass and see exactly where that shaft goes.
This has got to be just so exciting for you. I mean, it's not just being in Egypt, but the whole new permanent exhibit that's in partnership with National Geographic Treasures of the Earth, that also includes the Captain Kidd pirate cannon and the Chinese terracotta warriors. They didn't send you underwater or to China, though. You got to go to Egypt. That's pretty nice.
Well, I actually have been to both places, but it's part of what our commitment to creating as authentic as possible immersion experiences, family learning experiences for children and families that take you to as authentic as possible experience, and of course to have real artifacts there. As well, whether it's the Kidd cannon or objects from the terracotta dig or objects of the period of Seti, Seti the First, even if they're on loan, are part of creating this authentic immersive experience for children and families.
Jeff, tell me how the exhibit with Seti the First, how is this different from the exhibit Take Me There Egypt that's permanently part of the museum, and also other past Egyptian exhibits you've had at the Children's Museum?
Sure. Well, the past Egyptian exhibit, well, we obviously had King Tut here last summer, but we had a permanent exhibit that was based on, it was a tomb, a replica of an Egyptian tomb, and we had Wenu Hotep, which was a mummy on loan to us from the Field Museum in Chicago, and when he has returned back to the field, and we had a replica installed in the museum, and that's I won't say anymore. So the past Egyptian exhibit, which was the tomb of Wenu Hotep, was kind of self-discovery along the way, objects and cases. It was a very nice exhibit, kind of a faux tomb with a few things for kids to do, and with the tomb of Seti, as well as the underwater and the terracotta warriors, we're going to engage kids and parents as archaeologists and conservators and interpreters of, in the case of Seti, there are just some absolutely gorgeous hieroglyphs, as well as one part of the ceiling that represents the stars, and so there'll be lots for kids to interpret. There'll be a lot of conservation-oriented things to do, as well as putting some pieces of the puzzle together to help figure out what's in the tomb.
This is such a big, exciting project, and I know it's very unusual for National Geographic to help create a permanent exhibit like this. Correct?
Absolutely. They don't lend their name on a permanent exhibit too often. And we've been very blessed to have a wonderful relationship with them that really started probably 7 years ago with One of our honorary trustees, Mr. Alan Carroll, or Alex Carroll, whose son Alan is the chief cartographer for National Geographic. And Alan and I met at Alex's retirement party in Indianapolis just about 7 years ago. And Alex said, you need to meet my son, Alan. He was the art director for the National Geographic and then became the chief cartographer. And so we put our heads together and said, you know, the world's foremost map maker and the world's largest children's museum should put their heads together and come up with a great exhibit on geography.
Absolutely.
And we did. Our staff went to Washington, D.C. Alan came to visit us, and we gave birth to an exhibit called National Geographic Maps, Tools for Adventure.
Yes, I remember that.
And, right. And we were blessed to have Lilly Endowment fund that exhibit. It's still on tour. It was a traveling exhibit. And one of the six National Geographic explorers for that exhibit happened to be Dr. Zahi Hawass. And when we wanted to borrow Dr. Hawass's, some of his artifacts, some of his clothing and his hat and things like that for, and a robot for the exhibit, he said, you can have those things, but I would like you to come to Cairo and film me at one of my excavations. And so how could you say no, of course.
Right.
So we flew to Cairo and, filmed Dr. Hawass for the exhibit. And at that time, he invited us to go to meet with Mrs. Mubarak, the First Lady of Egypt, because Dr. Hawass was helping raise funds for her, for a renovation of her children's museum. And so we agreed to do all the design work for Dr. Hawass and Mrs. Mubarak for the new Suzanne Mubarak Children's Museum, which should open in about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And in exchange, we received King Tutankhamun for 3 months. And it was just a wonderful gift to us, and we're very excited because when we first landed in Cairo 3 days ago, the first place we visited was the new Suzanne Mubarak Children's Museum to see how construction was going and had a brief tour, and it's about a year away from opening. So that's a little bit about our Egypt relationship.
What a great partnership. And now, the new exhibit, and it actually won't open in Indianapolis at the Children's Museum until about summer of 2011. Is that what you're projecting?
Yes, it's a permanent exhibit, so it won't travel, and it'll open next summer on the lower level where What If used to be.
Okay, yeah, I was just going to ask you, where in the museum will we actually find it?
Lower level, and we're working on the possibility of a special entrance on the first floor. Hmm. Down to the lower level, which is, again, kind of based on this idea of a new entrance, a new shaft, and we're going to be learning a lot more from Dr. Hawass as we learned about what the team has really found at the end of that shaft.
Well, this is, again, a very exciting project, and just to remind our listeners, I'm talking to Jeffrey Patchen, who's calling us from Egypt right now. Jeffrey, I know you're not actually going to get to the Tomb of Seti I for a couple more days, but right now, can you tell us what do you see looking out your window, or where exactly are you right now? You're in Cairo?
We are on the banks of the Nile, and we are actually on the boat that we'll be taking up the Nile that leaves very, very early tomorrow morning. And we spent the day touring an active dig site called Elephantine Island, which is in Aswan. And Aswan, as you know, is the famous location for the Aswan Dam that provides controlled water north, because it's one of the largest river in the world that flows from south to north. So it's been a great day. It's dark here now. It's about 8:30 to 8:15 at night, my time, and today got up to almost 100 degrees. It was about 98.
A little bit warmer than here.
It was pretty warm, but very dry, as you can imagine. And we also visited a quarry where there's an unfinished obelisk, and it was very exciting to see because stone workers had been taking it out of the ground back in ancient Egypt of pharaonic times, the huge obelisk cracked, and so they left it in the ground as they were cutting it out of the bedrock, and so we had a chance to see that as well. And we visited an orphanage today for children, and this is the first trip we've taken with friends and donors of the museum where children have come along, and we have seven children with us, and we had a chance to visit an orphanage today, and Our kids exchanged gifts with the Egyptian children. It was wonderful.
This is just such an extensive partnership. Can you give me a sense of what the Egyptians think of having this type of exhibit in Indianapolis at a children's museum?
Well, they're very excited about that, and they've been very excited about the Take Me There Egypt, too, because we actually identified and met three or four Egyptian families living in Cairo, a rural family and an urban family, urban families and rural families, and got to know them. They allowed us to take pictures of their home, which, of course, then we replicated in the exhibit. So they're very, very excited. And, of course, when you come to the exhibit, you go, you take a short little ride on Egypt Air. So needless to say, the National Airlines of Egypt, which is Egypt Air, is very excited to have their airplane or their jet in our exhibit, and, of course, to advertise for Egypt Air. So it's been a wonderful relationship and a wonderful relationship with the Supreme Council of Antiquities and obviously a wonderful relationship with all of the Egyptians and the Egyptian community in Indianapolis.
Well, Dr. Patchen, I know you have an early morning traveling down the Nile tomorrow, so I want to say thank you very much for giving us a call and safe travels to you.
Well, Travis, thank you very much, and thanks for all of your support.
Travis DiNicola with the Children's Museum's president and CEO, Jeffrey Patchen, who is currently digging Egypt. The permanent exhibit, National Geographic Treasures of the Earth, opens during the summer of 2011. For more information, visit childrensmuseum.org, childrensmuseum.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4. I'll find out about the weekend celebration of creative spaces, rural places.
I'll find out how Wikipedia is saving public art.
And I'll get a preview of the Ouija exhibit at the IMA. And of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.